You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Okay, it's Monday, September 25th, 2017, and before you turn it off, Sammy Higgins is with us, along with Doug Brazzoni. I'm back, Brian Murphy, back. Sammy, Doug, thank you for doing a better show in my absence. McCovey Croncast, episode 68. Oh my gosh, we're so close to 69. yes, very exciting. More exciting than anything we have to talk about the subject of the Giants, maybe. But in my absence, which was all work-related, the Giants lost a lot of games. And, I don't know, weird stuff happened. Like, Pablo Sandoval is back? He's on the team now? Well, that's weird. And that's gone about as well as you would expect if you said Pablo Sandoval in 2017 was rejoining the Giants. Denard Span has crossed the... he's got 335 plate appearances now. That's weird. That's just bizarre. They traded Eduardo Nunez. This is all me catching up. The bottom line is the Giants are still bad, and we haven't seen any sort of hope for next season. Is that fair to say? I mean, if they're, I definitely recall reading about reloads and just getting ready to be competitive this year and probably ending on a strong note this year, but they gave up. I mean, the players pretty clearly gave up, and I don't think anyone would blame them when you've got this much amount of staggering human failure at physical activity that people would just start giving up. And I also think the problem with that is you can't unring that bell. Once guys get comfortable with giving up, you can't just switch it back on. You know, in what, 3 or 4 months, these guys are going to like start getting ready again for the season, or in like 2 months and training. And like, are they going to want to do it again? Probably not as much. Mainly because a lot of these guys are going to be 30 or beyond 30 now. And let me tell you, listener, when I turned 31, I felt like something had physically changed. It was harder to do a lot of stuff. Maybe not tremendously harder, but 5%. And it was a noticeable 5%. Like, it was just enough to be like, oh, it's going to be a little harder to get out of bed today. Or it's a little harder to get that exercise high that you push for. Like, instead of 10 minutes to get warmed up, it takes 15 or 20, whatever it is. So all these things, you might say, well, they've still got a good core. So even if they gave up this year, even if they were all like average or below average major league players this year, they're still always next year. Well, with baseball, it pretty much tells you the march of time is punishing, and it always goes down, not up. So from the outside looking in, meaning I'm not sitting here watching every game, recapping every game. The main thing that I've noticed is if you give up, you just get eaten alive. And I think that's what happened with the Giants. They just gave up and they're being eaten alive, and you don't usually recover. So that's my, hey, I'm back, guys. That's, I mean, if we just go down the lineup, I think I want to say Brandon Crawford probably gets a pass in terms of how much scrutiny he is warranted for his performances this year. I mean, he still hit 14 home runs. He leads a team in RBI for whatever that's worth to some people. It's still, he drove in runs and probably fewer opportunities than, say, Buster Posey and Hunter Pence and whatever. The point is, Brandon Crawford, I'll give him a pass and not really focus on him too much. But here's the one I want to talk about. And Sammy, this might be, you might get really lively here. Brandon Belt's not coming back next year. Brandon Belt is easily the team's second best hitter. There was an article in the San Francisco Chronicle this week that was, who wrote it? Oh yeah, Bruce Jenkins. And it was the article headline, Brian Sabian, Giants, quote, can't go on like this. And deep in the article, one thing that was mentioned, if it wasn't in this article, it was in another article about the Giants' core players for next year. And Brandon Belt was not mentioned in it. But here is the point in this article that I just mentioned. It was a bullet point. Between his concussion issues, burdensome contract owed $64 million through 2021, and streaky hitting, unwatchable during the downtimes, first baseman Brandon Belt has exhausted the team's patience. To be overly critical is simply not fair, with so many other players underperforming, and Belt is the most proven power hitter on the roster. He wouldn't appear to be going anywhere, but sources indicate that manager Bruce Bochy would welcome a different look at first base. So that to me is like, here's all the crap I want to talk about this butt-ass player, who's still pretty good. But I would say that considering that all the San Francisco media is pretty obviously a mouthpiece for the Giants organization, whether it's KMBR or the Chronicle, that it's, or even the Mercury News, that it's basically, this is coming from the team, that you wouldn't in the newspaper make such a strong statement if you didn't feel like there was, that you weren't going to get that much blowback. And obviously the media and institutions don't care what the individual thinks. So if Brandon Belt's hurt by it, they don't care. And Brandon Belt probably already knows his time is over. So what do you guys think? Brandon Belt is suddenly a burdensome player worth ditching?
Sammy, go for it.
I think in terms of, is this just a beat writer going rogue or just talking his own ideas? It comes at the bottom of an article that is an extensive interview with Brian Sabian. And so to me, it has the force of, if not being part of that conversation, it seems odd that at the end of an article, the writer would then take the time to be like, well, here's me spitballing and being totally cruel and I'm making things up based on this, that are coming out of this long conversation I just had with the vice president of baseball.
Yeah.
He's not. And then, but like I said, there was that Hank Shulman article, which I got to find the quote, where it mentioned core players and Brandon Belt was not one of those. Could that have just been a kind oversight? I don't know. They seem to want to talk about Will Smith every time the bullpen is terrible. So I don't know that forgetting a player is really something that the beat guys do, since they don't have to keep track of too many things for their jobs other than the players on the team. So I don't know. I would also just say, at if you're going to go, whether it's a beat writer doing it or it's the organization using the beat writer to get this information out there, I think we can all agree it sucks quite a bit, and it's pretty telling. I mean, it kind of makes me hope that the Giants just lose a billion games forever. That in a down season, when literally every single player in their organization sucks. They're the worst. They're awful. They suck. They're irredeemably bad, that they would then go, the guy that's on the concussion list, who was our second best hitter before he went on the concussion DL, he's the problem. Or he's a problem. If they're going to single someone out, you're going to write a long article about Brandon Crawford and all the struggles he's been through. And meanwhile, Brandon Belt puts up numbers that literally all but one other player on the team puts up, and say that he's an albatross or it's burdensome and they're sick of his streakiness. Get the fuck out of here. Go fuck yourself, Bruce Jenkins. Go fuck yourself, Brian Sabian. Go fuck yourself, Bobby Evans. Your stupid Mark Melanson deal sucked. You suck. Your team sucks. Don't forget your team sucks, and it's going to suck for a while. If people want to use Brandon Belt as a scapegoat, I think they're entitled to, and that entitles all of us to say that they suck and then go fuck themselves. That's all. They're going to just dodge missing 100 games, which I think they're going to think they deserve some sort of congratulatory banquet for. The front office, not the players. The players will be gone before the end of the last game. I pitched to the Giants on Twitter that they should have a banner unveiling ceremony for first team eliminated from playoff contention. And Brian Srabian responded. He said that that's not happening. But I think it should, because it's going to happen the next few years, and you need those banners. But I also am surprised that the Giants got so bad so quickly, which transitions us into our next topic of Tim Lincecum, former Giants pitcher. If you look at that, there was an article in the Mercury News of trying to find Tim Lincecum. And it was interesting that in the article that they did not find Tim Lincecum. They couldn't find him. Daniel Brown could not locate him. And no one knows where he is. No one's heard from him. His dad's even being quiet. His manager, his representation doesn't know where he is. His representative isn't even sure that was Tim Lincecum at the Women's March, that picture that's floated around. So my question to both of you is Tim Lincecum dead? Yes. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's dead. No, but now, actually, Sammy, what you made me think is we need to send the Royal Scouts to go look for him. They're the only ones with experience tracking him.
The thing is, Tim Lincecum doesn't want to be found, so we could send the Royal Scouts after him. But all he would have to do is hang up a giant banner wherever he is that says Alex Gordon would have been out. And Royals people are famously unable to deal with that information. So they would just turn around and hightail it. And he would stay as anonymous as possible.
Can I just add there how disappointing it was that it was Alex Gordon that broke the home run record?
Was it Alex Gordon? I thought it was... okay. Yeah. The season sucks, so of course.
No, it was Moustakas.
What I thought. I thought it was Moustakas.
I thought Moustakas tied it and Gordon broke it.
Either way. Right? Because wasn't that one of the things for like the first 2 months of the... it's Alex Gordon, you're right. It was... wasn't it... I mean, the first two or three months of the season, it was all focused around Alex, the Royals not being able to hit for any power. So it's just, it's whatever. Although, right, yeah, it would have been
Alex,
worse if Gorky's...
No power, and Alex Gordon was terrible, and everyone was terrible.
Yeah.
And the Royals were pretty good for a while, and now they're bad again. So.
If I think it would have been worse if, like, Gorky's Hernandez had broken it.
Okay, I disagree. Awesome. I think it would have been better if, like, Kelby Tomlinson had done it. Because he's got, like, that history of the most random home runs ever. that would have been the best.
I think it would have been perfectly appropriate for Gorky's to break it. Gorky's in his only home run of the year breaks the all-time record for home runs in a season. That would have been perfect. It would have been so stupid.
And that's what you want in a moment like that. You want ridiculous or stupid. You don't just want an average player hitting it. Come on.
That's true. Alex Gordon, who could be a Giant next year. Or Moustakas. Mike Moustakas, who could be a Giant, because apparently the Giants need a first or third baseman. Just back to the Lincecum point. I think it's interesting that in a lot of ways, Lincecum falling off a cliff and disappearing, his career has mirrored the Giants in some way. Like, the Giants as they are now. Like, he's disappeared and the Giants have disappeared. They're just not an entity that, you know, that exists in the world anymore. They're not entertaining. Nobody talks about them. Nobody should talk about them because they ended on such a bad note. And I guess reading that article, it reminded me of how similar their fortunes have been over the last 10 years, quite simply. And I don't think it's a one-to-one comparison because obviously there have been years where the Giants have done well with him doing poorly or him merely having flashes of doing well. But, you know, when he was successful, the Giants were successful. I think that's fair to say. And I don't know. Maybe there's some sort of... go ahead.
So you're saying Tim Lincecum is the missing link?
Or something. I don't know. Someone who has a personality could be the missing link, because the Giants are devoid of personalities. They really are all robots or racists. It really comes down to those two things. So I think they're just, yeah, I mean, or there's some sort of deal that was made, some Faustian bargain or some wizard perhaps tied the fortunes of the two entities together. And if Lincecum's down, the Giants are down, that kind of thing. I don't know. But it seems like it, because he's such a freak of nature, that the Giants really did have to do something to get someone that amazing to kind of change their culture. That was a very bad analogy. Welcome to Bad Analogy Corner with Brian Murphy. It's been a while. I think I've said this before. I'm definitely over the Lincecum nostalgia and all that, but I definitely think he's an interesting dude, and I don't think baseball writers should limit themselves to just what's going on now. I've also said many times, you know, oh, Jack Morris is not a Hall of Famer, but if you think he's so great, write a damn book about him. Like, just like, there are plenty of players who aren't going to be in the Hall of Fame who are baseball players are still worth talking about just because they're not in the Hall of Fame. It doesn't matter. So there's just lots of ways of cutting the sports storytelling. And yeah, Tim Lincecum, that's an era of Giants baseball for sure. This was an era of Giants baseball for sure. And it's a fun one to talk about. It's going to be weird when we're in our 60s, if we make it that far. We're going to be talking about this time period. Of, like, how things were and all that. That's our old-timer.
I mean, I wonder, is it more the Tim Lincecum era, or was it more the Buster Posey era? Because I feel like, if we're looking at just the Tim Lincecum era, this is a very short era. I think Buster Posey kind of came in and took, you know what I mean?
Oh, sure. I think we can... I'm comfortable with calling it the Buster Posey era. But, I mean, there was some overlap, and Lincecum was sort of the freak and the prospect and everything that, you know, oh, the Giants have a hotshot pitcher. They haven't had a hotshot pitcher in like literally 40 years. Like that kind of thing. It was sort of a changing of the guard, and Buster Posey I mean, Matt Cain really kind of is the first in that, but Lincecum then was sort of that exciting, oh, the Mariners had Felix Hernandez, and I don't know, maybe CC Sabathia was one of the, like, just, you know what I mean? Like, super exciting, really, you know, the Giants have their Kerry Wood, or the Giants have their whatever, and it's like, here he is. And then Buster Posey was next in the line of that, of these really team-changing talents that any team would build their franchise around, like that kind of thing. And then Buster Posey. But yeah, of course, the Buster Posey era makes a lot more sense. But Lincecum really did kind of kick it into orbit, the whole idea. Then, anyway.
So I guess we're definitely not going to call it the Joaquin Arias era?
No, we're not going to do that. I mean, it's the tail end of the Ryan Klesko era for sure, but not... can I just take a pause for a minute? This entire time I've had the team page open, and I'm marveling at two things. Brandon Crawford has 40 walks and 111 strikeouts. Nick Hundley has 11 walks and 77 strikeouts. Whoo, doggy, those are some awful numbers right there. A 7-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio for a hitter who is gonna get almost 300 plate appearances. I mean, Nick Hundley has been spectacularly bad this year.
He hasn't, though. That's the thing.
He has.
See, if you watch him, if you watch the Giants, you would know, Brian, that when Nick Hundley comes up, at least there's a possibility that something interesting will happen.
A third of his hits are doubles. A third of his hits are doubles. There is that.
he has hit doubles and homers, and sure, he's not technically good because his on-base percentage is .274. Jesus Christ, I should have looked at that before I started saying this. But I mean, I honestly, when it comes to Nick Hundley as a bat, I'm like, sure. It's not like it's not like watching Jose Castillo 9 years ago.
But he's not a backup. He's going to have played in almost 100 games.
I mean, he's a part-time player though. 300 plate appearances. Right, he might end up with less than 300 plate appearances on the year. That's a part-time player.
Fewer then, but okay.
Oh, I see how it is, Brian. I see how it is.
I think the bigger point is that the Giants are bad, right? So that's enough of that. The Giants do get to be awful against Clayton Kershaw when we're recording this podcast. They're about to start, and Doug's going to recap the game. But before he recaps, let's pre-cap the game, guys. How's Clayton Kershaw going to do against the Giants today?
Sammy?
He's going to do just fine, I'm assuming. I just feel like, sorry, I'm looking at the lineup. Of course, Mac Williamson is starting this game. Of course, because he couldn't start a game where he could actually be successful in. Screw it. They're getting no hit.
No hitter. Okay. I'm going to say 7 innings and 11 strikeouts keeps flashing in my head, but I'm going to just keep it to 9 strikeouts. 7 innings, 9 strikeouts, no runs.
So I'm having these two conflicting impulses that about how long he's going to pitch, because it is more of a tune-up start for the playoffs, so they're not going to push him. But on the other hand, he's facing the Giants. So, I mean, he could throw like 7 pitches an inning and throw a complete game. And it's pretty tough to know how it's going to play out. I'm going to say, though, you know, he has one inning where he looks almost human and the Giants get a bunch of pitches out of him. So that'll limit him to 6 scoreless innings, 9 strikeouts, 1 hit, no runs, 1 walk, but it's on a bad call.
any idea of who might get that walk?
Yeah.
I was going to say Pablo Sandoval, but
I think, yeah, I was kind of debating between Sandoval and Williamson, because I think if Williamson got it, then Bochy would in his head be like, well, he should have struck out, you know? Right.
No, that's why I think Williamson's going to strike out. He's like, I can't take a walk here. I won't play again. So, but if I strike out, they'll hate me forever. But I got to play again. So it doesn't look good for the Giants. It never will again. Let's go to your questions for this week. We got a few. Basically, three of them are, or two of them are very similar, so we'll knock those out first. From our own Jen MacRamos, what are you going to do when the glorious off-season arrives? And Mike Foster at Scout_6 asks, how excited for the sweet release of season's end are you? Oh, also players kneeling. Oh, he snuck that one in at the end. But basically, what are we going to do and how are we going to feel when the season ends?
Well, in some ways, the Giants have been not playing all year. So it's not really changed that much.
Yeah, it doesn't change anything. I'm going to feel like I don't have this thing I need to pay attention to when I get home at night or on the weekends. And since I don't watch the NFL, I don't, I'll feel really unencumbered. I'm going to feel great.
I'm going to be transitioning to basketball, so, it never ends. At least the basketball is good, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I appreciate that the Giants are going to, for the rest of this calendar year, exist as this shitty thing that you can just, take pot shots at. Like, it's just going to be this, it's going to be a beached whale that's just sitting there, and you can pick it apart, you can just shoot your gun at it when you're drunk in the middle of the night. You can strap some TNT to it and blow it up and let the pieces fly everywhere. Like, it's just a thing that's going to sit there. So I feel like since I'm going to keep writing for the site, unless Grant fires me right now, which maybe he will, that, all the articles can just be angled towards, the Giants were bad. How bad were they? Or just every article can just make sure that you spend time talking about, let's talk about how these smart people who won 3 championships also built one of the worst baseball teams ever assembled. Like, you can just keep doing that. They find variations on the theme. So there is that.
No, it's true. I have several ideas that I have to wait till after the season. Cause hey, let's look at how bad this team was really. And I have to wait. Cause maybe they'll get worse than the last week. They're not going to get better. Nobody expects that, but they could get really bad in some new, fun, fascinating way. Maybe not fun. But, it would throw everything off. Sammy, what do you have?
Well, I was going to say, that's why I wouldn't write off them not getting to 100 losses just yet. There's still 7 more games, including today's, so they could get there.
Yeah, they have to win, I think, 2 more.
Yeah.
And
that's
they're not
assuming
win
a lot.
So 2-4, because they're playing the Padres. The Padres could sweep them. The Padres will probably sweep.
So if they... I want them to lose 100 games. I think it's not because it's my own masochism or anything. It's no, they are a 100 loss team. They don't deserve to get out of this at the very end and then pretend like they got their homework in on time. No, they're a bad team. They suck. They don't deserve credit for anything.
They don't get to do the move where they crumple their homework up a little bit, throw it in the corner of the room, and then let the teacher discover it a week later.
That's right. Wait a minute. Your extemporaneous speech that you were supposed to prepare for, you didn't prepare for, and now you're wasting our time? No, you're not getting a good grade on this. F*** you. I have a lot of bleeps to put in here in the editing. Players kneeling. I think the reason why they're kneeling is awful, and I'm glad that something is being done to shine a light on the fact that there is inequality and murder, authorized legal murder happening across the country. So I'm all for players kneeling, and it's the protest that all the angry people who have the most to quote-unquote lose have demanded of people who are wronged, and that's peaceful protest. So if you can't handle peaceful protest, you're really saying you can't handle any protest. What you're really saying is shut up and do what I say, and I can do whatever I want, and I'm not going to treat people like human beings because I'm in power, to which I think most of us would agree, people who think like that don't belong in the discourse. They should lose what they have. And if they don't want to listen to silent protest, there are other measures that could be taken if they want to silence it. That's what I think.
So, people seem to want... People seem to want to protest they can ignore. Like, they don't want you in the streets and blocking traffic. They don't want you kneeling silently at the beginning of a game. What they really want is to ignore the problem, and I don't think that's an option. So I'm very happy to see that more and more players are joining in and that it has now spread to baseball. So good for Bruce Maxwell.
I think the protests are good. I think the thing that they're protesting is bad, and it should be protested at every opportunity all the time. And the people who have a problem with that, if I can quote Brian from earlier in the podcast, go f*** yourself.
Yeah. And I think the thing that's going to happen, or the annoying thing, is this is going to get twisted into some protest of the government, of the president, let's be specific. And that's hilarious to me, because that's such a narcissistic thing to make it all about them. And it's also hilarious that we as a culture will always find ways to dull the edge of something and say, oh, that you're protesting an important thing, but I'm going to appropriate it into something else to dull what it's really about, to distract from it, because I can't handle it. I think that's a problem. We can't handle the serious stuff. So that's why we're doing this Giants podcast, right? And the last question comes from LB37 at LB37. Three things you're going to do with all your free time. Same question. Now that you're going to be free of the 2017 Giants, how will the Giants mess up their draft? Let's work backwards in this. It's not guaranteed that the Giants will mess up their draft, but I think if they do, it's going to come down to they're going to miss whoever becomes the consensus one or two players as a top pick, and they're going to mess it up by going for someone unconventional because they don't have to max out the bonus, and they can distribute that bonus money down the line and either get more players or more talented players earlier.
I disagree. I think they could screw it up because they're going to look at what they've done. They say, look, maybe the Giants way isn't sustainable with this power surge that we've missed out on. They go for the consensus number one prospect, and then he gets hurt. And then they realize they need to double down on what they do and draft nothing but Joe Panics until the end of time.
Yeah. That's basically the risk for every team, though.
Yeah.
Right. Sammy?
I don't know.
You don't think about the draft.
They'll take the top pick, and then they'll trade him for somebody next year.
Oh my God, Sammy! That was the most cynical version.
How did we miss that?
So at the deadline next year, when the Giants are like 5 or 6 games out of the second wild card, and really they just don't look great, but there's still like maybe some hope, they'll trade the top pick for like a Doug Henry type, like a middle reliever or someone to boost, or a bench bat.
No, see, I think you're thinking about this wrong. I think they're gonna be in the second wild card by like a game, and so they're gonna trade it for another lefty reliever because all of their lefty relievers turned to ash.
Yeah, that's the most Giants way of this working out. Wow. All right.
Yeah. And also, they will already have started their free fall. Just to be clear.
That's right.
How can they fall any farther and still be competitive?
Yeah.
No. So next year they will be competitive for like 2 months, and then they'll start their free fall, and then they'll trade the prospect for a reliever.
Okay.
And then, yeah.
Okay.
But my question is, what's their pitch? My last question to both of you before we sign off: what's the pitch to free agents? Is it just someone shrugging with their hands up, going, "We can't get any worse."
No pressure, JHC. <Yeah. laughs>
I don't really see them pitching to free agents. I don't see them actually like going after anybody, to be honest. Unless it's an outfielder, or unless they trade Brandon Fell. Oh my God. I don't see them actually being aggressive this offseason.
Well, but I just can't even think of what the pitch is for anybody, to a free agent, to come to San Francisco. We're first on North Korea's...
San Francisco is a beautiful town.
Yeah, but it's first on North Korea's target list. The taxes are exorbitantly high. You can't hit in this park. There's plenty of things they have to work against.
Other people seem to hit in the park just fine.
Well, they don't get to, like, they're not going to be able to face their own team's pitching. So, wouldn't that be something? If it was just the Giants playing themselves, like, they are so bad they get relegated to their own one-team league.
Would they find a way to lose the team twice?
There's your pitch.
What's that? There's my pitch.
Oh, I was saying, there's your sales pitch. You get to hit against Matt Cain every day.
I hope next week, whenever we come together, there's something more positive to talk about. But in the meantime, I'm encouraging all of us to adopt a more every 6 day mindset, which is find the fun in the disaster. Because this isn't real disaster, everybody. This is just a stupid, dumb baseball team filled with butt-ass players and a front office that has had an entire industry pass them by overnight. That's the thing that terrifies me, folks. It speaks to my insecurities. Like, they wake up one morning and suddenly they literally are the worst thing in their industry. And it's passed them by and they don't know how to follow the lead. But find the fun. It's not Mary Poppins. You find the fun and poof, the job's a game. No. It's you find the fun and poof, the things you loathe are the things you can just get all your anger and resentments out. And it's not about booing the players. It's just being like, look at how exquisitely bad every single batter is. It's like they've never seen a major league pitch before. Look at, they've spent all this money and time. They get on a plane. They pack their bags all to go and embarrass themselves in front of thousands or millions, if it's on TV, of people every night. And they get paid a lot of money for it, sure. But isn't that fun? Like, Buster Posey is going to be the captain of the most successful run of San Francisco Giants baseball. And he's going to be the captain of the worst time in the history of the team. That's impressive, I think. And it's kind of funny. And it makes me go, there's something funny about that that I wish I could find the exploit to. And I will in this offseason. So there you have it. You can send us your questions all week. All three of us are on Twitter in some capacity. Doug?
I am at Moonwalk McFly.
Sammy?
I'm at Sammy Higgins.
Also, alternatively, if you don't want people to engage you online, you can just say, please let me be. and, of course, McCoveyChronicles.com. Grant, if I ever get him back on the show, can the three of us all agree that Grant has really worked his butt off this season? He's got three jobs, and two of those jobs involves covering the Giants.
Yeah, he's really just he's made some bad decisions. he was a really poor person in the past life. I don't know.
He was a Yankees fan in the past. That must have been it. Well, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, and definitely hold us to our predictions for yesterday's Giants Dodgers game. Bye, everybody.